Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On with me today I have Don Kidd, who is former Air Force, but he is the Executive Director at the Southern Colorado Technology Alliance, which is headquartered at Catalyst Campus in Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. So Don, welcome today, and thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me, Chris. This will be fun. It's enjoyable.
Definitely. So, give us a background on yourself first. How did you get to where you're at?
That's a great question. I don't get offered to ask that question very often, but it's not a difficult story to tell. That's for sure. I've been primarily a consultant since I retired from the Air Force in 2003. I was at the point where about a year ago, in fact, probably about 15 months ago, I had plenty of work to do, and I was finding myself, because I was on the board of directors of the Business Alliance with Kevin O'Neill, I found myself getting drawn down to the Catalyst campus just to check in on Kevin and Ingrid and the folks down there and to see what I could do and where I could help out. So I was kind of volunteering about a half a day a week, and just spend a little time with them and seeing where I could help out. And then as time went on, I got deeper and deeper involved, and now, of course, I'm the executive director of one of the nonprofits down there, of the Southern Colorado Technology Alliance. So it has been, and it's really a passion for me. I mean, this is an opportunity really to help in Kevin O'Neill's vision to help small businesses, to build prosperity, to do some economic gardening in Colorado Springs and Southern Colorado. I'm just thrilled to be there.
So this is the first time we really had too much conversation about Catalyst Campus.
Sure.
Now, people in Colorado Springs will be very familiar with that name, but we have a lot of listeners nationwide and international here. Explain what this Catalyst Campus is.
Sure.
What is the vision there?
Sure, happy to do that. Well, as many folks know, particularly in the local area, Kevin O'Neill has been a very successful businessman. And what he decided to do a few years ago, about 2010, was start to give back to the community. So he wanted to build a collaborative infrastructure, a collaborative venue where businesses of all sizes pretty much could come and collaborate on solutions that they couldn't or didn't want to go after themselves, to put it very simply. For instance, Kevin has got something called the O'Neill Group Management Company that does a lot of the accounting, HR, et cetera, for a number of small businesses that the O'Neill Group Company owns. So they spread those services out across companies, and he basically took that model and enlarged it to mm-hmm. and turn that into a Catalyst Campus. So on the Catalyst Campus, we will have things like a business support services area where we'll have companies from outside the O'Neill Group, but within a local area, like accounting firms, law firms, a bank, consulting firms that do proposal development, capture management, those kind of things that small to medium-sized businesses really need to succeed, but you often can't afford to bring on a staff.
So it's like pooling resources for
right.
small businesses
right.
to have all the things they need to do there.
So those companies that want to come down and be part of that at the Catalyst Campus will inhabit a portion of the campus, and our companies that reside there and that are members there will know precisely where those folks are and what their hours are, so they can go in and buy the drink.
Mm-hmm.
They can go in and see the lawyer for the time that they need to see the lawyer, or the HR, or the accounting service. So we're building that out. Plus, it's the infrastructure. We tell a story about a two-person company on the campus that wrote a proposal, and in that proposal they described all of the conference rooms that they had available, all this infrastructure that they had available, the R&D labs that were being built out, a space ops center that we're building, and the SCIF. And of course, the program manager knew these two guys personally, And he said, you guys are kidding me. You got to be kidding me. You guys can't possibly own all of this infrastructure. And they said, no, you're right, we don't. But we are members of the Catalyst Campus, and as members of the Catalyst Campus, we have access to all of this infrastructure. We have access to research labs. And so the program manager came to visit and said, I give, you're absolutely right. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. So it's like an incubator for small businesses to turn that corner to being self-sustained.
It really is. And that's really, and thanks, Chris, because that's really how we describe Catalyst Campus, as a defense industry incubator.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Because that's really how we describe Catalyst Campus, as a defense industry incubator.
And I was just going to ask that. So it is focused. Most incubators are focused on a certain industry.
You bet.
Talk about the focus for this particular incubator.
Yeah. Well, I think as the Catalyst Campus was starting, we probably had a broader view. You know, that that the view was really around advanced technology across industries, across sectors. But as we've evolved here and as we bring more folks on, our focus really has become the defense industry. So we've embraced that. I mean, that's what we do. That's where we're focused. That's where our customers are. Those are the people that are interested in what we're doing. So we really are a defense industry incubator and a support services provider.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, Southern Colorado Technology Alliance.
Right.
How does that fit into what you're doing here?
So as Kevin was standing up Catalyst Campus, he realized that he needed more than just a single organization to run the campus, to be part of the campus. So what he did was he stood up three organizations. The Catalyst Campus LLC is the only for-profit piece of that. So the O'Neill Group Management Company and Kevin O'Neill, who have produced and developed all this infrastructure, turn this over to the Catalyst Campus LLC for management. Mm-hmm. So Catalyst Campus LLC rents the conference rooms, rents the office spaces, rents the desks for the co-working space and the classrooms. But that's the only for-profit piece. The other two organizations they stood up is a 501c3 called the Center for Technology, Research, and Commercialization, CTRAC. And then a 501c6, a member nonprofit, called SCTA, the Southern Colorado Technology Alliance. And the Southern Colorado Technology Alliance is what I currently run.
Okay. Yeah. So now, member-based,
how
many members do you have, and what is your objectives?
We're right around 30 members, and we're growing pretty quickly right now. And we're growing pretty quickly right now because of a couple opportunities that are coming our way. And like I said, most of our members are around aerospace and defense. There are one or two that don't live in that world. They dabble in aerospace and in the defense industry, but they've got some other great capabilities that could be applied to the defense industry. And like I said, we're growing all the time. One of the things that we're pursuing, and you and I have talked about this a little bit earlier, is called it's an other transaction agreement. It's an agreement with the Space and Missile Systems Center out of Los Angeles, and they are looking to stand up a space enterprise consortium, an other transaction agreement called Space Enterprise Consortium, where they will expect us, when I say us, I say SCTA, to bring in members to fulfill whatever requirement they bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And this OTA is to address, and I put this in quotes, all things space. So it could be anything from a new launch vehicle, and this is rapid prototyping, so it could be anything from a new launch vehicle to a TTP, to a new bus for a satellite, to a new satellite, to space operations. It could be across the realm of space operations. So we have no idea from one project to another what we're going to be asked to do. So we need to be able to bring in companies from across the space domain that dabble in all areas of that space domain.
Mm-hmm. So now, do you guys as a group or as members go after government contracts
right.
as teams? Is that right. part of what...
Right. Well, we go after it as teams, but primarily we would SCTA would bid as a prime or as a sub on a traditional contract. This OTA that I'm talking about is not a traditional contract. This is mm-hmm. outside the federal acquisition regulations, which is pretty new to a lot of folks. It's an opportunity for really two goals for the government. One is rapid prototyping of new technologies. And the second is getting access to not only the traditional primes and subs that we see all the time, but those non-traditional vendors, those small companies that have great capabilities and great technologies, but typically don't have access to the government, or the government doesn't have access to them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't work for the government. They've never worked for the government. They wouldn't know how to work for the government if asked. And even some companies that because of the way prime contracts are written, don't even, despite the fact they may be doing a little bit of work with the Department of Defense now, don't typically have access to the customer. They don't interface with the government personally on a one-on-one basis at all.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a fun effort. It is for, like I said, it's for all things space, and what better place to do that than right here in Colorado Springs?
Yeah, lots of space here. We're looking at cyber specifically.
You bet.
This organization sounds like, you know, bigger than just cyber. How
well,
much
it's
are
bigger
you focused?
Than just cyber, but I don't think, Chris, that you can you can't do anything, you can't develop anything in for around space without taking cyber into account. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's true with a lot of areas of our lives, but particularly in space. I mean, space is all about moving electrons around, whether it's taking images and transmitting those back to ground stations or communications or whatever have you. You have got to make cybersecurity part of that foundation
mm-hmm.
before you can ever develop the capability.
And I had another guest that said there's no such thing as a development government contractor anymore, no such thing as an IT company. They're all cyber companies, and then whatever else they do.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the government is looking first, have you covered the security aspects of this?
Sure.
contract, this proposal,
you bet.
Before they even see if they're capable of doing the work,
yeah.
that's the first thing that they're looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah, absolutely,
now.
Absolutely. And they need to. I mean, I think for years it's been taken for granted that that we're not exposed in a lot of ways to cybersecurity, but in fact, we are. You know, from the very time, let's take a typical procurement. Let's take a large satellite that we put an RFI out on the street. Back in 1998, we let the world know what we were doing. We in fact told them precisely what we were doing. So you know, adversaries at that point are starting to look. Even young kids who have access to computers and know their way around the cyber world are who might be interested are starting to probe to see what's going on. By the time now you have that satellite developed, sitting on a launch pad and ready to go, it's hard to believe that a lot of adversaries or even friendlies haven't gotten inside that satellite to see what's going on, down to the most trivial aspects.
But you know what? I would say from my perspective, I've been in private industry.
Mm-hmm.
So this government, this space organizations that are going on here in Colorado Springs,
mm-hmm.
even having lived here for a decade, those go on in separate buildings. They're apart, and
yeah.
what you're talking about understanding and knowing what's going to go up there before it goes wasn't something I was familiar with.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
even though that community seems so big that everybody within it knows what's going on, those things are kept relatively closed
yeah.
loop.
I think for many, many years we've tried to do things in stovepipes, but we've you're right, they're done in they're done by a small group. I would argue the closed loop
mm-hmm.
piece of that. You know, I mean, it's behind firewalls, but it's not a closed loop. It is, in fact, you know, a lot of things that we thought were never vulnerable were vulnerable. A lot of companies that never thought they were being hacked were hacked. You know, you can talk to the NSA commander, the Cybercom commander, or the lead senior officers in any cyber command, and they'll tell you, you know, we're getting robbed every day.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Well, I think a lot of that was, you know, 5 years ago, they didn't think of putting cyber first in the designs, and they put a backdoor in for maintenance. It was a valid loop to close,
So sure.
It's probably not as much because they were neglecting it, but it was purposely designing in ways to make it more convenient to maintain it.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you at all. I think for a long term, though, we just didn't understand the depth and breadth of the threats that we were facing until it was probably a little too late.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think most folks would agree with you. You know, you had senior Air Force General, I can't recall his name right now, just in a paper the other day. Yesterday, in fact, equating the cybersecurity situation to the Super Bowl, you know, and that, you know, we've kind of been getting our butts handed to us.
Yeah, it's I've seen those so many times in the cybersecurity industry that there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of political, a lot of, wow, we need to fix this problem fast.
Yeah,
it's an expenditure that is then in other years, lean years, forgotten about or very much backburnered.
Well, no doubt. I mean, we're asking the Defense Department in the lean years, particularly during these years of sequestration, to make some very difficult choices, and we had some major programs of record that had to be continued that ate up great portions of that defense budget. So our discretionary money to do things like cyber was limited.
That's kind of what I see is when right now they're saying there's not enough employees, not enough people in the cyber environment.
Right.
But I could tell you that going through the last boom in cyber, which for me was in the smart grid and the energy, so many people got sucked into that industry. And then 2 years later, they let the balloon go, and those employees had to go find work somewhere else.
You bet.
And now there's not enough employees in cyber.
Not enough.
But the reason is because the balloon went out of the cyber industry, and myself as being one of those went and looked for work somewhere else.
You bet. And now, and just like you said, Chris, now we're facing a real dearth of those skills. You know, just in Colorado, and my numbers are probably a couple of months old and probably underestimate the problem, but right here in Colorado Springs, I understand we got 1,200 jobs that are open. IT to advanced cybersecurity, I mean, that whole spectrum of folks that we need, 1,200 jobs just here in Colorado Springs, 13,000 in Colorado, 500,000 across the nation.
And so many of those have, like I said, just been opened up recently in this now new light coming to cybersecurity. And honestly, in 2013, I knew one cybersecurity experts, people that I considered top of their game, that were just looking for work in any industry they could go to.
Yeah, sure.
Right after the Edward Snowden when the political pressure on cyber was just stop everything until we figure out what to do.
Yeah.
But we had 2 years of that.
Yeah.
And people can't live through 2 years of
You're absolutely right. They've got to find something else to do.
Yeah.
They got to find something else to do. And in the meantime, they're not keeping up with what's going on in the industry.
an industry goes light, and now we're in the famine.
Yeah.
The feast, and, I guess, area.
And I will tell you, I mean, I think that those numbers that we just talked about are only going to grow, and it's just a matter of how quickly they grow and just how exponential that growth is. We've got a lot of folks right now that, that even today, Chris, that if you talk to about cybersecurity, they'd look at you, their eyes would glaze over. You know, they have no idea what you're talking about. They're not the least bit concerned about it. It obviously does not affect their life whatsoever, when it really does.
Yeah.
So as folks realize the need and realize the threat, that industry is only going to get bigger.
Yeah. So now, but the government focus. In the government, and this back to the job thing, there's a lot of open jobs right now. And I've heard talks about, what type of people they're filling the jobs with. And the number one commodity isn't cybersecurity training and education. It's government clearance, at least in the Springs.
Yeah.
How can the Catalyst Campus, I know we talked about this before, help with maybe that bringing people in that can get their clearance as part of bringing into the industry?
Yeah, we're talking through that with a couple of our academic institutions, in fact. Boulder is putting in place, CU Boulder is putting in place a program where they're going to have some of their students in their sophomore and junior year working in areas where they're going to, that are just on the edge of classified, so that they can work on their, on getting their clearances and getting that squared away, so that as they graduate, they've got a TS, a top
secret. So do you think maybe some of your organizations that are members, you could engage to say, hey, can we put a student here, student there, student here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that need is only going to grow. You're absolutely right, Chris. I mean, there are never enough cleared folks. And to be perfectly honest, I mean, the issue that we've run up to here in Colorado Springs with legalized marijuana has only made that more difficult. It's not making it easier, certainly in Colorado, to find those folks. But we are. I mean, we're still recruiting them. We're bringing them from other parts of the nation. The great thing about Colorado Springs is it is a great place to live.
It is.
So you've got folks that we're competing with cities like Huntsville, we're competing with cities like Melbourne, Florida, we're competing with cities across the states, and then you look at Colorado Springs and you just know the quality of life here is so much better than some of those others. And I'm not knocking the others, because there are a lot of people who are attached to those, but I think we've got a pretty good draw here.
Yeah. So now I'm wanting to start a new business.
Uh-huh.
I've been in business for a while and I'm wanting to
grow.
Get into government contract.
Got it.
And there's a lot of that I'm hearing is opportunity here in Colorado Springs. How do I engage with you? How do you put a call out to companies, to people,
easy.
And how they work with you?
That's easy. Come down and see us. I promise you, you'll be amazed at some of the things we're doing at Catalyst.
What if they're not in town? People contact you from...
Stay in touch with us. Work with us. We'll make you part of the team. You don't have to be here every day. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be at the campus every day. In fact, most of our companies are not at the campus every day. But when we have prospective companies or customers come to the campus, they know. And if they can get into town and be part of that conversation, it's important for them to be part of that conversation. We're presenting to our companies opportunities all the time to get to know their prospective customers more intimately.
Uh-huh.
And that is exceptionally important. As you sit down writing a contract, writing a proposal, understanding what's keeping your customer up at night is important to you as a company. And that allows you to shape that proposal to the best fit.
Uh-huh. So if you guys are looking at from an organizational point and maybe going after a big government contract,
mm-hmm.
do you then reach out to new members that have small companies and say, come on in, join us, be on this?
Absolutely. As we find opportunities, I mean, one of the first things we're doing is reaching across our members saying, what can we do? What can't we do? Where are the gaps?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to who do I need to go after? And we're always looking for companies that will work well with others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's key. I mean, we want companies. This is a collaborative venue. this is where we expect, and we're gonna ask you to come in to sign an NDA, and we're gonna ask you to sign articles of collaboration. And those articles of collaboration, in very simple terms, simply say that not only am I responsible for protecting my IP, but I am responsible for protecting the IP of my buddy sitting around the table here as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got to understand that this open kimono, this collaborative environment presents me with some challenges, and I've got to help my friends out, my fellow members. So that's the only way we're going to be able to get to.
So there is a big focus on individual companies' IP protection.
Oh yes.
So absolutely. You're looking for startups and people with new ideas, and you help them get that IP protection in place as well.
We want to make sure that the IP that they bring to the table is the IP is still their IP as they walk away. We don't want anybody else taking ownership of that, and we don't want anybody else releasing that IP outside of the membership. So yeah, we have some pretty frank and open discussions down here, and it's a responsibility of each and every one of us to keep those discussions confidential, at least in terms of IP.
Interesting. So can you give us an example, without violating anybody's IP, of something that has gone on recently that would be a good example to companies that might want to get involved?
Well, and in fact, let me present one to you that I think really kind of illustrates the value of SCTA and collaboration. We had a company that has developed a standard for signal distribution for their customer, and their customer is one of the service departments, and the CEO came to me one day and said, Don, I don't know what to do. I have got this RFI presented to me that the way it's written for big primes. I can't answer it. In fact, mm-hmm. I'm already starting to get pulsed from the primes looking for my technology, looking for our IP. And this is just not the way I still have got a passion for this business. I still want to grow this business. So I'm not willing to release it, but I don't know what to do. If this RFI turns into an RFP in its current state, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Somebody else is going to go develop a new technology, and I'm going to be in trouble. What do I do? I said, and my response was, I have no idea. But let me tell you what I do think. I can bring the rest of the SCTA members around a table, and we can figure this out. Mm-hmm. So we did. We brought another 8 or 10 companies. They sat in a conference room for about 2.5 hours and gave the CEO a game plan, a campaign, to turn that RFI into an RFP that he could compete against, and he did. So now he's got at least a shot at making his technology available now to his customer that has declared him as a standard. Otherwise, the customer wouldn't have got what he wanted.
Okay. So that's a good example of how, you know, the small companies can benefit. The big companies get to help and support that. Yeah. What do they get, like a Lockheed or a Boeing comes in? What do they get out of your organization?
Well, I think access to the small companies. You know, whether you're a midsize or a large, there are still small business goals on every contract that I know of, and with different accreditations. If we've got a prime, in fact, we started having a prime industry day. Our first one was in January, where we had one of the primes come to the table and in front of our company say, this is where I'm having problems. This is where I need small businesses. This is what the customer is looking for that I can't provide. Who can help me? Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we want to be. We want to be kind of the small business hub. When a prime needs a small business of a certain kind, or that brings a certain capability, give us a call. We'll find those guys for you.
Okay.
You know, the interesting thing about small businesses, Chris, and I say this over and over again, nobody started a business because it was fun. They start a business because they're passionate about something. Mm-hmm. Let's harness that passion. Let's take advantage of that. I mean, these guys are passionate about what they do. They are innovative. They're thinking every day about new ways, better ways, smoother ways to do what they do, mm-hmm. or what they're expert at. Let's get them in front of the customer.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining today. Kind of in closing, is there anything you want to get out about future events you have, things people can drop in on that you want to just get out to the public?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that we want to talk about, and there are lots of things coming up, and but rather go into great detail about them. Some of the really cool events too that are coming are with our partnering 501c3. So C-TRAC, and I understand you're going to
have C-TRAC. We're going to have C-TRAC on here recently.
We're going to have C-TRAC on here in the near future, but they are doing some amazing things with the Air Force Academy in what the Air Force Academy calls its CyberWorks program. It's the Air Force Cyber Innovation Center, now called CyberWorks. C-TRAC will come, and I'm sure the conversation will be very lively, but there are some great opportunities to work with C-TRAC and the Air Force Academy, particularly with our IT and cyber companies here in town.
Okay. Yeah. Is that an invitation only, or is that something open to the public?
No, we make it open, but it really depends on the project that the Air Force Academy is doing and what kind of capabilities they need.
Okay.
And that will reach out to the companies that we know of, but we'll make it public, that effort, so that if we miss somebody, you know, tell we need to tell our companies, don't hesitate. Don't hesitate to let us know you're available and want to participate.
All right, and how would they find out? Do you have a calendar on your website?
It'll be on the website. It'll be on the C-TRAC website, the Catalyst Campus website, and the SCTA websites.
All right, and send me those, and I'll put them on the write-up for this podcast.
You got it.
All right. That sounds great. Well, thanks for joining today, Don. It's been a pleasure.
Always. Thanks again, Chris. Look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, have a good day.
You too.
The views or opinions expressed by me during this podcast are my own and are not those of my employer, Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.